And we're back. Lucky us, we're going to be able to speak to Zafar Bangash about the crisis, and I think it's a very serious one, in Pakistan, where the former prime minister, call him former, he was illegally, in my view, removed from office, but that this is not my territory, it's Zafar's territory. And I don't actually hear anything from the Canadian authorities complaining about that. But let's get to Zafar. Are you there, Zafar?
Hello, Phil. Yes, I'm with you.
We really need to know what's going on here. My paper today says not only is the leader, Imran Khan, the most probably, I guess, most popular leader in modern history in Pakistan, he's in prison, but they've arrested his one of his closest associates today.
Yes, that's correct. Actually, let me sketch the overall situation for your listeners so that they keep that in mind, and then we can go into the details or the steps that have been taken that has brought Pakistan to the brink. The essential tussle in Pakistan is between the people's will, as represented by Imran Khan, and a fascist military junta that insists on violating the people's rights so that they can continue to remain America's slaves. And since Imran Khan refuses to allow Pakistan to be a slave of the United States, he is being punished by the military, especially the army chief and a small coterie of generals around him, to try to eliminate Imran Khan from the political scene. And when I say eliminate, I don't mean only eliminate in terms of the political sense. They are so ruthless that they would not hesitate to eliminate Imran Khan physically, that they will kill him or murder him in prison. Now, Imran Khan has been put in prison in a remote prison, a notorious prison. There is a place called Attak. That prison is on the banks of the River Indus. And he has been locked up in a cell that is reserved for inmates that are on death row. There is, in that room, there is no window in that cell. It measures 9 by 9. There is no bed. He has been given a dirty mattress to sleep on the floor. For the toilet, there is a hole in one corner of that cell. There are no shower facilities. His lawyers are being prevented from meeting him, although his lawyers obtained an injunction from the High Court in Islamabad that they be allowed to meet him, that his family be allowed to meet him, that his political associates be allowed to meet him. But they are refusing to allow all of these facilities to.
Can I, by the way, ask you just about that? I also read, I think it was a statement by his wife, and maybe the party that he leads, but that the court had said he was to go to another prison. Is that
exactly
right?
Exactly. You see, this judgment that was issued against him, and I want to come to that judgment as well, which was delivered on August the 5th. It is a scandalous, way. It's a scandalous way of dealing with these matters. But in that judgment of August the 5th, the judge had said that he should be sent to Adiyala jail, which is just outside Islamabad. And in that jail, there are proper facilities for prisoners. Now, Imran Khan, obviously, is not somebody who has committed a murder. He has not even committed the crime for which he was convicted. And let me explain to you exactly what is it that he was convicted for. He was accused of selling a watch that he had received as a gift from the Saudi ruler when he visited Saudi Arabia. Now, the procedure for such gifts is that any official on an official visit abroad has to surrender that gift to a government repository. And there is a law that official can then purchase that particular gift at 50% of the price that the government repository officials have determined.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Imran Khan did.
That's, by the way, to show that it's a serious gift and he's actually is going to receive it under the appropriate condition.
Correct.
So that that's respect for the giver.
Exactly. In fact, before Imran Khan became the prime minister, the price that was established for these gifts was only 15% of their value. But Imran Khan increased it to 50%. So he said that at least, you know, the government should get some benefit. And so once he received that watch, he obviously sold it through somebody. And then he declared the income from that on two separate forms. Number one, his tax returns, which have to be filed with the Pakistan Revenue Board. And secondly, the forms that he has to fill out with the Election Commission of Pakistan. But he declared all of these in his income statement. But in the Election Commission form, there is no provision to identify as to where this income has come from. But he declared it. And the Election Commission is saying that, well, you did not identify that this money had come from the sale of that watch. Now, just imagine.
It's hard, by the way, remains to pretend, everybody's pretending to be serious. I mean, it's such a farce to listen to. It's unbelievable.
It's a farce, absolute farce. And you know, there are other, incredible things that are going on. So Imran Khan's lawyer said to the judge that, Your Honor, we want to present witnesses in court, Imran Khan's accountants, to explain exactly what they have done. Imran Khan did not fill out these forms himself. He did it through his accountants, who will be more than happy to explain exactly what they have done and what the procedure is for identifying his sources of income. The judge refused. He said, no, I will not give you time to bring your witnesses. Either they appear immediately or I'm going to deliver a verdict. The defense lawyer said, okay, we would like to call those people that have made allegations against Imran Khan so that we can cross-examine him in court. He said, no, I will not allow you to do that either. And then this judge, this brighter of a man, a low court judge, not a very high judge, he adjourned the court for half an hour, and he came back with a 30-page verdict that he claimed he had written in 30 minutes.
The man is a prodigy.
Exactly. This verdict was actually written for him by the army, handed over to him to hand down to Imran Khan, and Imran Khan was arrested before this charge or this conviction was even delivered to him. He was arrested before that. He was at his house. The police were already at his house. They broke down his house door. They beat up his employees over there and his friends, and they dragged him out of there. And even though the judge had said that he should be lodged in Adiyala jail, he was taken to Attak jail, which is 80 kilometers west of Islamabad, and locked up in a cell that is reserved for death row prisoners. Now, the judge, as soon as he delivered this verdict, he fled the country. He took a flight out and went to England. And you know what he went
Mission
for?
Mission accomplished.
Exactly. He went to attend a course. Now, just listen to this. He went to attend a course at Hull University, University of Hull. It is in northern England, on human rights.
Of course.
And so, you know, this man
The devil could write the book on human rights.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so you see that this is just outrageous what is going on over there. Not only that, Imran Khan's defense lawyers are being targeted and attacked. One of his main lawyers, his cousin was killed, his brother-in-law was killed soon after this verdict. And then that particular lawyer is now being threatened, and he has to go into hiding because they have threatened him as well that they are going to kill him. This is what we are witnessing and experiencing in Pakistan. But there is more. That's not the end of the story. You know, the joke of a parliament that existed in Pakistan after Imran Khan was ousted from power, it passed two bills. One is called the Army Amendment Act, and the other is called the Official Secret Amendment Act. Both of them were passed in parliament when there were only 10 members present in parliament. There was no quorum. Okay, so 10 members sitting over there, they hurriedly passed.
And this is recent days, or when? When did this happen?
Okay, these were done. One bill was passed on July 31st, and the other on August the 7th of these last few days. Obviously, according to the Constitution, the bills have to be sent to the president to either sign them or send them back with his comments or whatever. Now, the parliament dissolved on August the 9th, and the president did not sign these bills, and he ordered his staff to return these bills without his signature. And lo and behold, on August the 18th, sorry, not August the 18th, sorry, August the 17th, or 18th, or 19th actually, August 19th, the media in Pakistan, which again is of course controlled by the military, there are, you know, journalists that are basically not actually journalists, but they are, they do the bidding of the military, so whatever the military tells them, they will just carry those orders. So they showed the president signing certain papers, which is of course nothing to do with these bills. And they made huge headlines and blaring sort of, announcer breaking news, etc. on television that the president has signed these bills. And the president was astonished. So he immediately ordered his staff to investigate exactly what has happened. And now it has transpired that not only did the president did not sign any of these bills, but his own staff violated his orders because his staff were taking their orders from the military.
They probably saved his life.
His principal secretary, of course, he has fired his principal secretary, and he has said that he then wrote to the Supreme Court justice. He said, I want a full investigation of this matter. It's a very grave matter because it was announced that he has signed these bills when he said, I have not signed those bills. And here is more. He wanted to issue out a statement. The law ministry told him, no, don't. Imagine the law ministry. I mean, the president of the country is the top authority in the country. He is the supreme commander of the armed forces. He is above the prime minister. He is above the parliament. And he is being told by the law ministry that, no, you can't issue a statement. He wanted to issue a statement on the official presidential Twitter account. It was blocked. Then he issued that statement on his personal Twitter account to say that I've not signed these bills. This is a fraud. And it seems that somebody forged his documents on these bills, and they have become law, and a number of people have now been arrested under these bills, that they are going to be tried for treason because they revealed official secrets of the country, that they violated the Army's Act, etc. This is the joke that's going on in Pakistan today. I mean, it is worse than a banana republic.
Yeah.
And all of this because these gangster generals want to remain in the good books of the United States. They cannot imagine life without American patronage. Although America has repeatedly kicked these generals in their teeth.
Yes, and they humiliated Pakistan time after time.
Absolutely.
You and I on this show talked about the fact that one day a crazy CIA man, I forget what kind of problems he had, but he killed a cab driver, he killed a policeman, I don't know. He did,
yeah.
And made his way to the U.S. Embassy,
yeah.
And they had to let him go home without any charges.
It was Raymond Davis who did it exactly on January 27th, 2011, in broad daylight in Lahore, in a busy street. He shot two people from the back. He, in his car, he took a high-velocity pistol, and he shot both of them 9 times. He killed them, and at that time, the intelligence chief of Pakistan was so anxious to protect the CIA contractor, Raymond Davis, rather than two citizens of Pakistan who were murdered, that the intelligence chief of Pakistan coerced the families of these two men. In fact, there was a third person who was killed when this man, Raymond Davis, immediately phoned the U.S. consulate in Lahore, and they sent a vehicle. And that vehicle, of course, was speeding to reach him. It was driving on the wrong side of the road. It hit another car and killed a third person. So that means three people were killed, and their families obviously lodged a case in a court of law in Pakistan to try this man for murder. And yet the intelligence chief of Pakistan coerced the families of these people. He actually threatened them. He said, either you accept blood money, or I'm going to make a horrible example of you, and you will disappear without a trace. So the intelligence chief fired their lawyers. He appointed his own lawyers, and they went to court, and they said to the judge that, Your Honor, these people have agreed to accept blood money instead of pressing the charges, whereas the families
He flew home to the U.S.
Absolutely.
Utter humiliation. The depths of the military corruption and willingness to do the bidding of the U.S. is just, I mean, this story has been now overwhelmingly developed, I mean, and demonstrated. I mean, can you talk about the cable that?
Yes.
Apparently, the cable is the one that really has them reeling. Is it because, of course, it's the Americans say, get rid of him.
Yes, exactly. Basically, what had happened was that on March the 7th, 2022, a third ranking State Department official by the name of Donald Liu actually threatened Pakistan's ambassador in Washington, a very respectable man. His name is Dr. Asad Majid. And Donald Liu told him that either you get rid of Imran Khan as prime minister, or there are going to be very serious consequences for Pakistan. And he even said that, and there was, of course, talk in Pakistan that Parliament was going to, and again at the instigation of the military, to present a no-confidence motion against Imran Khan in Parliament, when the military had basically purchased a number of parliamentarians, given them lots of money to break them away from Imran Khan. So Donald Liu said that unless that no-confidence motion succeeds, or if that no-confidence motion succeeds, then all will be forgiven. If it does not succeed, then Pakistan is going to face very serious consequences. So the ambassador basically sent a letter to the Foreign Office in what is, of course, you know, he sent that letter through a cipher code, that special code, not, you know, obviously this was a secret cable. And then once it was received in Islamabad, it was decoded so that they would understand exactly what it says. And once it was decoded, it was presented before the National Security Committee. Now, this National Security Committee comprises the Prime Minister, the Foreign Minister, Interior Minister, Army Chief, a number of other, you know, chiefs of the Air Force, Navy, etc., and, you know, basically intelligence chiefs, etc. It was discussed thoroughly, and it was then agreed that, yes, this is a threat to Pakistan, and we will not accept this threat from the United States. The National Security Committee agreed on that, and that we are going to deliver a demarche to the U.S. ambassador in Pakistan. And Imran Khan, after he was removed from power, which was on April the 9th of 2022, in one of his rallies, he said that we had received this letter, and this is all, I was removed from office because of America's threats to Pakistan and through the military, that is what they have done. So immediately, the army chief and others said, oh, he's revealing national secrets. We didn't receive any such thing, et cetera.
Yes,
et cetera.
The fact that they ordered us should be a national secret.
Can you imagine?
The people shouldn't be told.
Yes. Yeah. And then, of course, this whole issue was published, this cipher issue, by this American web magazine, The Intercept, earlier this month. They actually wrote a complete report about it, and The Intercept said that we received this copy from an official in Pakistan who is in the military, but he does not wish to identify himself for very obvious reasons. But the content of this letter or the document that we have received is authentic. And the military has not been able to deny that. They cannot, because that is exactly what it was. So now they had to bring these amendments to the Official Secrets Act and the Army Act in order to convict Imran Khan by saying that, well, he has,
That's retroactive legislation.
Yes, exactly. So this is retroactive.
It wasn't a crime when it happened, but now it's a crime.
Yeah, you see, the actual crime would have been if he had released the cipher itself, but he didn't release the cipher. He released the translation of the cipher or whatever it was communicated to him. It wasn't even necessarily the translation. It was actually the gist of that cipher, that this is what the letter had said, or this is what Donald Liu had said. And that is why the National Security Committee had called or demanded that the American ambassador be called to the Foreign Office to be reprimanded for interfering in Pakistan's internal affairs. And so you can see the manner in which the military is manipulating everything. They simply cannot imagine life without American patronage. And I'll give you the reason why that is the case, even though they keep on getting kicked in their teeth. But these are shameless people. Back in 2010, WikiLeaks leaked some documents. And there were documents from Pakistan as well, actually from the U.S. Embassy in Pakistan that were sent to the State Department. In those documents, the U.S. ambassador at the time said that the Pakistanis are so low, and of course, the ambassador was referring to Pakistani officials and military officials, etc., that they are so low in their mentality that they will even sell their mothers for a few dollars. These were the precise words in those documents that were cables that were sent to the State Department.
Yikes. That's old Colonel Blimp, isn't it?
Exactly. When the Americans are they're so blatantly insulting the Pakistani military and the Pakistani officials, and yet these shameless people continue to want to suck the Americans' feet. They simply have no shame, no self-respect, no dignity. And this is the crime for which Imran Khan is being punished, because he says we are not their slaves. We have some dignity and honor. We want to stand up for our rights and our dignity. And for that, he has been put in a stinking cell in jail on a death row. This is what is happening in Pakistan. And in the process, in the last 15, 16 months, Pakistan's economy has been destroyed. So there is absolutely nothing left of that country. I sometimes wonder why Imran Khan even bothers to want to come back to power. It would take decades to even bring Pakistan back to the point where at the time when he was removed illegally from power. Mm-hmm. And there are, in fact, all surveys have shown that he enjoys anything from 80 to 90% of the support of the Pakistani masses. And now the government, of course, has now imposed, this joke of a government. They have imposed restrictions that, these companies should not conduct any surveys in Pakistan because that is, affecting people's thinking. Mm-hmm. So this is the tragedy. This is a horrible situation that the people of Pakistan are facing today.
Yeah, and they've also decided that the election will be delayed because they've decided, what is it? They said, we have to take a census.
Yeah.
It's odd that would come up. Didn't anybody think of that earlier?
You see, before that, when the Election Commission was asked by the Supreme Court of Pakistan as to how long it will take them to prepare for elections. They said, we will need 4 months to prepare for elections. Now, this was not at the beginning of this year. It was actually last year. Now, this year, you see, the procedure is that when the assemblies are dissolved, as the National Assembly, the main assembly, was dissolved on August the 9th, the Constitution says that elections have to be held within 90 days. There has to be an interim government that has to be, they refer to it as a caretaker government, whereas many people have already dubbed it the undertaker government. It said that, no, we have to hold a new census, do a new census, because the old census that was done in 2017 is too old. This is just an excuse. Yes. It has nothing to do with the reality. And they said, well, if this is going to be, you know, we are going to do a new census, it's going to, by the time we are able to do the delimitations of new boundaries, etc., we will get into the middle of December. And then after that, we are going to hold the elections. But even that, the overwhelming majority of the people in Pakistan, those who are informed, they are of the opinion that the military does not want to hold elections for the next 2 to 3 years. The reason being that they want to eliminate Imran Khan from the scene, either physically or politically. And politically, they can't do that. Physically,
people should remember there was Mr. Bhutto, and then there was his daughter.
Yes.
They play very rough in it.
Absolutely.
I have to ask you, what about this? Yeah. This it is said, I mean, and you just put your finger on something really interesting about Imran Khan. People have to remember, he would be one of the most famous Pakistanis without even being anywhere near politics, because he's one of the greatest cricket players in history. And he is very wealthy in his own right. But he knew he was putting his life at risk, and he won, and he was shown to be popular. So, there are people who say, well, the generals are doing what the generals always do, but they may this time have something bigger on their hands that it might end up bringing them down. What do you think about the circumstance, the political base of Pakistan?
Well, you see, as you pointed out, Imran Khan made his mark as a world-class cricketer. In 1992, Pakistan won the World Cricket Cup for the first and last time in its history. It was under Imran Khan's captaincy. Then he came to Pakistan and he built three world-class cancer hospitals in Pakistan, putting his own money there as well as raising funds from the people of Pakistan, as well as, because of his international celebrity status, international celebrities supported him in his fundraising efforts. So there are three world-class cancer hospitals that he has built in Pakistan. Then he built a world-class university in a very underdeveloped area of Pakistan. So even before coming into politics, he had contributed all of these things. Every other politician in Pakistan's history, without exception, except of course for the early period when Pakistan came into existence, but every politician since that time, they have been mega thieves. They have robbed the country left, right, and center. I mean, you know, the Imran Khan's predecessors, Nawaz Sharif and Asif Zardari, and etc. These people have stolen billions of dollars out of Pakistan. Imran Khan has brought billions of dollars to Pakistan. So he's the kind of person who, despite the fact that he sacrificed his own family, for instance, he was married to a beautiful girl, a British girl, Jemima, daughter of Richard Goldsmith, a billionaire, and he had to divorce Jemima, not that he didn't love her or Jemima didn't love him, but because Jemima couldn't live in Pakistan. The political opponents of Imran Khan were so low that they were getting very dirty and filthy, and Jemima couldn't take it. And Imran Khan wanted to serve his country, so he told Jemima that we will part amicably because I want to go back to Pakistan to serve my people. Now imagine a person who has made such great sacrifices in his personal life, and invested his own wealth in order to support the people of Pakistan. And the people of Pakistan, of course, love him because they see what he has done for them. And here we have these criminal generals who are thieves of the big, highest order. All of these generals have their properties either in U.S. or Canada or Britain, Australia. And the moment their term ends as, you know, military personnel, they immediately leave the country. They don't live in the country anymore. And they claim that they have the right to decide what is good for the country and what is bad for the country. And their, all of their children and family members have either green cards or Canadian citizenship or British citizenship or Australian citizenship. I mean, you know, these generals are simply not capable of fighting. And obviously people have raised this question as to why does Pakistan need an army of 680,000 plus, you know, hundreds of thousands of other paramilitary forces.
And a nuclear weapon.
Yeah, exactly. With nuclear weapons at enormous cost to Pakistan, they consume openly more than 40% of the country's budget. And of course, there are undocumented sums of money that they use for intelligence and other purposes. And the intelligence agency in Pakistan has basically become an intelligence agency to target Pakistanis, not to protect the country. So this is the grim situation that the people of Pakistan face today.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the other thing that's been going on there is since his removal, Pakistan has become, a less stable, but also its neighbors are feeling the effect, it appears, of interference from, I guess we could say, Pakistan intelligence, right? We have issues with Iran, Islamic Republic. You have issues with, I heard, by the way, there was a cancellation of a pipeline to Iran. Maybe that's not so. I don't know. I'll ask you. And then there's a matter of who are they talking to in Afghanistan. They seem to be back to their old tricks.
Yes. You see, the thing is that you are right. Both of these, with Afghanistan, I mean, India is a traditional enemy, but with Afghanistan, which was supposed to be a friendly government there, in less than 2 years, that friendly government has turned hostile. With Iran, you are right. That actually, that pipeline agreement, which was signed in 2012, it was basically Iran. The agreement was that Iran would build the pipeline on its side of the border, bring it to the border, and Pakistan is required to build that pipeline within 10 years of signing that agreement. Otherwise, Pakistan would have to pay massive amounts of damages, which amount to about today, because Pakistan has failed to build that pipeline on its side, of $18 billion. Pakistan has to pay Iran that money.
And by the way, wouldn't you assume the Americans are behind that, saying?
Of course.
Because,
exactly.
I mean, their only game with Iran is provocation and sanctions.
That's true. But you see, the thing is that when Pakistan signed that agreement, Iran stipulated into that agreement, I mean, they knew that Iran was under sanctions at that time. So the Pakistanis signed that agreement with their eyes wide open, not with their eyes shut. There was no hidden agenda over there. Secondly, Iran insisted that this pipeline has to be completed within 10 years. And if you don't, then you have to pay a fine. And now Pakistan is saying, well, we can't do it. You know, we want to withdraw from this agreement because of America, etc. But American sanctions were there even in 2014. Those sanctions were not removed. They were only removed partially after that nuclear agreement, the JCPOA, that was signed in July of 2015 between Iran and six group of countries that provided a little bit of relief to Iran. And then Donald Trump tore up that agreement in May of 2018. But during that time, there was no restriction for Pakistan to build that pipeline. But what had happened was that at that time, the Pakistani prime minister went to Qatar and he signed an agreement with Qatar to provide liquefied natural gas to Pakistan at 30% more than the price that Iran was going to charge Pakistan. Now, can you imagine that, your
someone own made a little money out of that.
Exactly. And he took $2 billion in bribes from Qatar at that time. So Pakistan doesn't have gas. the energy prices have skyrocketed in Pakistan. People cannot pay their bills. I mean, the IMF has given Pakistan $1 billion in what is called a standby agreement for 9 months. And the agreement stipulates that electricity and gas prices and these have to be increased. I mean, you know, they have gone through the roof. Mm-hmm. Food prices have gone through the roof. Poverty has increased tremendously in Pakistan. Something like 60 million more people have been added to the poverty list since Imran Khan was removed from power. And so you see that, you know, the poor people are being crushed, whereas the rich are living as if there is no tomorrow. And there's a tiny parasitic class. Exactly. So that's the horrible situation mm-hmm. that the people of Pakistan are facing today.
They say they're going to delay the election. Will the party be able to field candidates? Because here we are, one of his top people is arrested today. It must be very dangerous to be a party leader. But will they be able to field candidates? And I suppose, you know, it's not like some countries. Actually, you can be in prison and you get to run for office. I assume he's blocked totally, is he?
Yes. Well, you see, even if they bar Imran Khan from contesting elections, although the election commission has already said that, you know, since he is convicted of this ludicrous charge, that therefore he cannot run for elections for 5 years, even if Imran Khan is not able to run for elections, even if they ban his political party, they can always create another party and fight under another name. And I'm 100% sure that if Imran Khan were to give his party ticket to a lamppost, the people would vote for the lamppost because they know that that is Imran Khan's lamppost. I can guarantee you that. And that's precisely what these generals are terrified of, because Imran Khan has said that when we come back to power, we are going to go after all of these criminals, whether they are civilians.
There are many uses for a lamppost.
That whether they are civilians or they are military officials, we will haul them before the courts of law and charge them with crimes against the people of Pakistan.
Absolutely.
For stealing, for murdering people. I mean, you know, Imran Khan's party workers there are more than 10,000 party workers in prison. There are some party workers whose wives, whose daughters, whose sisters, whose mothers have been hauled to prison. And they're being raped. Mm-hmm. This is documented. There are people that have given testimony that this is what these bloody people are doing to our... And of course, among Muslims, the honor of their women is a very, very serious issue.
Yes.
And that's what they're doing to try to break them. I mean, you know, in the past, when we have talked about what's happening in Indian-occupied Kashmir, this is what the Indian army is doing to the Kashmiri women, that they rape them over there in order to break the Kashmiri's struggle. Now, this is exactly the same tactics that the Pakistan army is perpetrating against its own citizens. So people are saying now, what's the difference between what India is doing in occupied Kashmir and what the Pakistan army is doing in Pakistan against its own people?
Mm-hmm. No, it is... All these questions are bound to come to the surface. I wonder, does he have, often, you know, we are looking from abroad, and of course you have, this is Zafar Benghash, who grew up and understand Pakistan very well. Are there regions where he enjoys a kind of popular support where it, I know he's a national figure and is supported, but there must be areas which really don't care at all or even listen or want to listen to the generals?
Oh, Imran Khan is extremely popular throughout the Muslim world. He mm-hmm. enjoys immense support, and I'll give you the reasons why. You see, it was Imran Khan who raised the issue of the insulting cartoons of the Prophet of Islam. He raised
the burning of Qurans in Sweden.
Exactly. And he raised the issue of Islamophobia at the United Nations repeatedly, so that on March the 15th, 2022, the United Nations General Assembly passed a resolution saying that March 15th would be commemorated as a day against Islamophobia. And this was through the direct efforts of Imran Khan. So you see that, you know, the rest of the Muslim world has tremendous respect for Imran Khan because they see him as perhaps one of very, very few leaders who is principled, who is honest, and who cares for the ordinary people. Yeah. And this, obviously, is something that he can be proud of. This is something that the people of Pakistan can be proud of. But unfortunately, he's suffering and languishing in a horrible, stinking prison cell because he wants to give dignity to the people of Pakistan. He wants to talk about freedom. And the generals and the Americans say that, well, you can't have freedom. We decide what you can have and what you cannot have.
Yes. Well, we have to believe that cause will prevail. Zafar Bengash, as eloquent as always, we really do appreciate it. Thank you very, very much.
It's my great pleasure, Phil. Thank you.
Zafar Bengash, make sure to look him up. Just put his name in and you'll get all the information.